is mine.
Yeah, so live here on Joy 99.7 FM, this is Newsnight. And let's start with the unrest on the labour front, shall we?
Indeed. Tonight, university administrators across the country are worried because university administration across the country has been brought to its knees. Universities are unable to process salaries and allowances, with many forced to postpone reopening dates and PhD oral exams indefinitely as the strike by four labour unions stretches into its second week. Evans, the unions include the Senior Staff Association of the Universities of Ghana, the Ghana Association of Universities Administrators, the Teachers and Educational Workers Union, and the Federation of Universities Senior Staff Association of Ghana. Their concerns border on government's failure to pay their agreed fuel and vehicle maintenance allowance and the delays in the payment of their past Tier 2 pension fund for their fund managers. Well, we know that the strike is already taking a toll on the running of the universities, and let's gauge the impact of the industrial action around the country. My colleague Michael Ashali joins me in the studio with more on this. Michael, you've been doing some checks. Let's start from the Greater Accra region, the University of Ghana to be precise. What's happening there?
Well, firstly, well, we know that school was expected to reopen on Thursday, which is tomorrow, September 26, and teaching and learning would have commenced on Tuesday, October 1. But in a statement circulated to all students and staff members of the university, says that the arrangement has been postponed. It says this is due to the ongoing strike by the various employee groupings. They said again that they will announce a new date in the coming days, except that they're not sure when exactly that will be. We'll also understand the University of Ghana was planning to hold some activities, including where UGDA, but currently, as it stands, we're unsure whether that will happen because they expected students to be on campus for it to be successful.
Michael, let's go to the central region. We understand that the University of Education, Winneba, has also been forced to make similar decisions. Tell us more.
Yes, Fosti. So in a social media post, the university said that they regret to inform the public that due to the nationwide indefinite strike by university administrative unions in Ghana, coupled with staff proceeding on compulsory leave at the university, all administrative operations have currently been temporarily suspended.
Now, let's take you to Kumasi. What's happening there?
So, the Akintin Apia Menkan University of Skills Training and Entrepreneurial Development in Kumasi, it says that the PhD students may have to wait a bit longer before they can graduate. We understand that the graduate school has been forced to postpone PhD oral examination. It doesn't appear that a new date will be announced anytime soon. For some students, this may not entirely be bad news for them. It gives them some more time to prepare for their exams.
At the University of Energy and Natural Resources, we know that staff may not be paid by the end of the month. Why?
Well, firstly, the statement, as we have cited, signed by the Director of Finance that we intercepted, says that due to the strike, payment of September 2024 salaries and book and receipt allowance may delay. And it goes on to say that it talks about some of the relative or the unions and the strike actions that is going on, that the reason for we didn't be able to do this. And we know that GAWA, for instance, administrators are the ones who are supposed to be doing the processing of these fees, but they are not there to do that, including senior staff members.
Thank you, Michael Ashali. Now, although the impact is beginning to get out of hand, the striking unions are not ready to call off their strike anytime soon. National President of the Ghana Association of University Administrators, Michael Uswansa, says they haven't heard from government and will not back down.
No, unfortunately, we have not heard from the government, and that is the unfortunate part of it. We don't know what government is waiting for, but we in GAWA think that this whole statement, the failure of the wages and salaries commission's work, because they should have anticipated this statement, they should have followed up. But fair wages also give the impression that they are also waiting on the Ministry of Finance. But Ministry of Finance do not work with individuals and institutions, so we cannot on our own go to the Ministry of Finance for any feedback. But what has happened since we declared our strike is that we have had a meeting with the vice chancellors of the various universities in Ghana. We call them the Vice Chancellors Ghana. The Vice Chancellors Ghana have listened to GAWA on the basis for our strike, and they have accepted to intervene by trying to link up with the government authorities. Nothing has changed. The various issues we complain about still remain unresolved. And so until a resolution is found, the strike will continue.
Now, we've also been speaking to the leadership of the Senior Staff Association of University of Ghana, and they believe the government is not ready to meet their demands. Listen to George Anson, who's the national chairman of the association.
We have concluded negotiation. We have signed the agreement. That is where their work ends. And they have written to the ministry for the ministry to authorize payment. So for fair wages, what else do we have to do with them? For them, concerning their strike, they have done their part. Allowance, particular allowance, cast through from senior member to junior staff. Now, this same ministry has written for UTAC to be paid. But what about us? As we speak, nothing has come out. If you all go to the kitchen to prepare meals, and when we addition it, you take your bowl out to go and find your own means of feeding yourself, will you be happy? As long as they refuse to pay, we are on strike.
Let's bring in Dr. Cynthia Senna-Akpeglo, who is Executive Secretary, Vice Chancellor's Ghana, and they are, as we speak, taking emergency measures to avoid a complete shutdown of the universities across the country. Doc, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. From what I understand, you've arranged several meetings to try and get this resolved as soon as possible. When are these meetings happening, and what are you hoping to get from it?
Thank you, Evans, and good evening to our listeners. We have commenced the meetings. We have held, as the president of Gower has already said, we have had one crucial meeting with Gower. We have indicated, put up some decisions, and we have started working on them. We have had some engagements with GTEC, that is the regulatory body that has the authority to be issuing the directives from Ministry of Finance and Education. We've engaged them also. The chairman of VCG has engaged them. Unfortunately, many of these officers are out of town. We expect that they'll be back on Sunday, and we hold some emergency meeting. But in the meantime, we are speaking behind the scenes. We are, you know, on calls day in and day out since the strike was declared. So we have scheduled to meet with the Minister of Education. When things like this happen, we have a joint meeting, because you don't want to meet the agencies privately and then this will say I wasn't there at the meeting, I didn't hear this. So we are meeting with the we are scheduling to meet with the Minister of Education, Minister of Employment and Labour, Ministry of Finance, all the representatives and GTEC itself, and plus VCG, and then we cannot sit around the table and determine the way forward, because obviously, this means that the universities are shutting down all over again and disrupting the academic year, and this is not good for anybody.
Is it that bad, though, that if this is not resolved as soon as possible, you'll be forced to shut down the universities?
It is bad, Evans. It is bad. The academic year, if you followed, since COVID, it has disrupted in a very big. It has been disrupted in a very big way. Instead of students coming back in August, now they come back all the way in January, and that also shortens the teaching and learning period. And the university curriculum is wide and broad, and the students need to be on campus, you know, for a lengthy amount of time to be able to get everything. Well, they can't get everything 100%, but the more they are on campus, the more teaching and learning will go on. So if we disrupt this again, it means that, I don't know, it's not a good picture. So we are also working around the clock. We are working behind the scenes. We are talking to the agencies to see how, and we are talking to the unions themselves. So VCG will have a meeting with the unions all together, and then we will, you know, this thing needs just constant communication and trying to diffuse the misunderstanding and all those things, so that we all come to a better agreement and make sure that we get back to the campuses for work to go on.
All the key concerns raised by the unions borders around money, the field maintenance, the allowances, the tier 2 pension. Do you have the money to solve the problem?
VCG, it's government that has the money. It has never been the universities per se. It has always been government that pays the emoluments and all these basic thing items. It's government that pays it. The other IGF and non-monetary things that the universities take care of, and that one has been agreed upon and is happening. Once we sign off fair wages, there's an indication, and then the payment is made. But when it comes to the fiscal, that one that comes from the government, and that is where the issue is coming from. So I'm sure that if we have a roundtable conference and talk about these things, we should be able to come to some arrangements.
But we've been doing a lot of talking, and that's a concern of a lot of people. Moving forward, how soon will the schools be forced to shut down?
Well, that one will have to be left for to be decided upon by the universities when we meet again. We are arranging to meet very soon on the in early October. So, but then I'm sure we'll even have some emergency meetings immediately. We note what the way forward. But it's a very dire situation. With the universities themselves now determining that we want to shut down or we want to postpone reopening and all that, very soon all the others will probably join in. But the earlier we talk about it, the better. These conflict things, you can only talk about them. You can only talk and then take action. If you don't do the communication first, the misunderstanding continues to thrive. So we need to talk. When we talk, we understand, and then we will take the decisions and take the actions. But I'm only praying that we will do that very quickly and soon, so that we're able to resolve the issue.
If talking fails, what's the backup plan?
Let's get there first. I'm not sure talking can completely fail like that. Let's get there first.
Thank you, Sena, for joining us here on News 9. Well, that's not all. Papani, we've been doing some checks, and we understand that technical universities will also begin to see similar strikes in coming days. Tell us more.
Well, Fosti, so let me take you. The Technical University Senior Administrators Association of Ghana have also served notice of the intention to initiate industrial action in response to what they call breach in government agreement with, and that is what they call the collective bargaining agreement. Their concerns are not so far different from that of the teacher unions at the other universities. They're also asking for their vehicle and full maintenance allowance. And again, they're also asking for their tier 2 pension allowance. However, they say that government has refused to implement these revised allowances, constituting a clear violation of their rights and a repudiation of the agreement. Now, further, government has discriminated against TUSAG in the payment of common allowances due to the unions of the same class of workers at the public universities. They are demanding the payment of the agreed upon rates for vehicle maintenance allowance, off campus fuel, utility, and sanitation stroke security allowances for month ending September 2024. It is our resolve that should these payments, and this I'm quoting for them, not reflect in the ending of September 2024, that will definitely validate their claim, and they will proceed on leave at the end of the month.
Well, there are more strikes on the horizon. This time, you may not be able to get access to the remains of your deceased loved ones, as the Mortuary Workers Union plans to withdraw their services within the next 12 hours. The union say they are unable to assess PPEs for their work, and they are yet to receive allowances for acting as frontline workers during the COVID pandemic. General Secretary of the union, Richard Kofi Jordan, says preservation of bodies will be on hold for as long as they are on strike.
One of them has to do with the personal protective equipment. We have to negotiate for personal protective equipment? No, it has to be provided. Number one has to do with some salary arrears that dated back 2020, which has not been fulfilled even though promises were given. The third one has to do with some 500 financial clearance, which we are hoping that government can issue for us to employ people and recruit people. Unfortunately, on our side, mortuary workers were exempted. We were told that those on the front line, somebody who is an accountant who works in an office with a tie and coat, blowing our air conditioning, becomes front line. And those who are actually working for the past 4 years, we have followed up on this, but there's no results. Where we have gotten to now is that tomorrow, God willing, if we are all alive, all mortuary workers in the Republic of this country, of Ghana, shall lay down their tools. We are not going to do anything that we do. Everything we do will not be done tomorrow. It's a total withdrawal of services. So one, we are not going to take the body in the ward. We are not going to accept body from homes. Even under any circumstance, whether emergency or that, we are not going to attend. We are not going to be there to take care of anybody. We are not going to discharge bodies to their owners. And we are not also going to do any embalming or post-mortem at the morgue. Nothing is going to happen. We are going to close our doors, watching and monitoring and waiting for the general secretary to tell them to either go back to work or start work.
While the Public Sector Workers Union has issued a six-day ultimatum to government to heed to the demands of the striking staff of the National Commission for Civic Education over stalled negotiation on their poor working condition, the union has now thrown its weight behind NCCE. Deputy General Secretary of the Union, John Sampa, says they will lay down their tools if the ultimatum expires.
Well, they are saying that negotiation has not stalled and we have called industrial action. Our point is not about negotiation. Our point is the fact that for almost 2 years that we started negotiation, we have not completed, and we cannot continue to do so. And that is why we have taken the industrial action. If we are unable to resolve the issues by 30th, then obviously the 46th public sector institution will join the NCC and back on industrial action. We completely disagree with the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission on the fact that we have gone on strike without exhausting the process. We can never go on unending negotiation forever. And therefore, we think that the staff got to their elastic limits and we could no longer control the workers. It is out of frustrations. It is out of poor working conditions. It is out of discrimination against them. That is why they embark on the action. As a mother union, although we persuaded them to wait, they could not listen to us, and they went on the industrial action. We support it because they are members, and we are looking forward to resolve the whole issue, including NCC and the other institutions. If we are unable to do that by 30th September, we have already given notice of industrial action.
Well, let's take you now to Parliament, and we'll be doing a lot for Parliament shortly, but then Evans, we're just receiving some breaking news.
Yes, some story we're learning about that in the last few minutes. The managing director of ECG, the Electricity Company of Ghana, Samuel Dubig Mahama, has resigned as the head of that institution. In the last few minutes, we're learning this, and people around him have confirmed, himself has done so to me, that he had stepped down for personal reasons. And this has come at a time when we know that the ECG has had issues with the PURLC on the cash waterfall mechanisms, but also with the IPPs, the independent power producers, on this matter. It's been a running issue. This year, we saw it got to a head, actually, at a point when accusations and counter-accusations started flying between the regulator, the PURLC, and the ECG about the management of the cash waterfall mechanisms. He himself was personally accused of superintending over the mismanagement of the cash waterfall mechanisms, which in essence was is a pool that was created where all the monies made in the power sector value chain goes into this particular mechanism. And then the ECG, because the ECG is at the end where they bail all of us and take the money and then distribute it to all players in that value chain, it appears that that hasn't worked over the period. We have seen recently, just last week, the concerns raised by the PRLC in letters to both the presidency but also to the energy ministry, raising concerns about a failure of the ECG to comply with the cash waterfall mechanism arrangement for May, June, July, and August. Shortly thereafter, we saw that the ECG came back fighting the claims, and they had explained that the ECG, indeed, the allegation that had been leveled against them that we were mismanaging the waterfall mechanism wasn't true. And they explained that they raised five key points in this particular response. That one, they cited the failure of the stakeholders to confirm actual payments. That was one rebuttal that they put out. They also explained that the inability of IPPs to validate the amounts received does not inherently imply that ECG has breached the cash waterfall mechanism. So they were fighting on the claim that it had breached the cash waterfall mechanism. They went on to say that contrary to assertions, it has fully complied with the payments to tier two beneficiaries. As I said, if you're wondering what that cash waterfall mechanism is all about, is this pool where all the monies you make in the energy value chain come to, and everybody else who plays in that particular sector gets paid, including VRA, including the IPPs. they insist that payments have been made to Tier 2 beneficiaries, including the PRLC during the reviewed period, because PRLC itself also benefits from the cash waterfall mechanism. Mm. And this has been something that has been ongoing for the last few months, and many thought it had been resolved at some point. The PRLC actually resolved to sanction the ECG and its board, including some of Dubik Mahama himself. And we remember that the ECG got their lawyers right back to the PRLC. And this was a very public fight that rarely happens between two state institutions involving a regulator. Mm. My colleague Elton Brobe has also been working his sources and joints on the line with more on this. And Elton, we're learning in the last few minutes that the ECG head has resigned his post in the last few minutes. You've been learning a bit more on this.
Yes, Evan. So what I have in my possession is a letter dated today, Wednesday, September 25, 2024, an address to the board chairman of the ECG. And the letter is titled, the resignation letter. And this is signed by Dubik Mahama, Samuel Dubik Mahama. He says, I'm writing formally resign from my position as managing director of the Electricity Company of Ghana, effective 2 weeks from the above day. This decision, according to this letter, has not come easily, but after much reflection, it says, I have concluded that it is in my best interest to step away for personal reasons. The letter goes on to say that over the past 2 years and four, I've had the profound honor of serving this esteemed organization, and I'm truly grateful for the opportunity to have received. I want to extend my heartfelt thanks to the board for your unwavering support and guidance throughout my tenure. First, I also wish to express my sincere gratitude to the president for the trust placed in me, which has been a significant aspect of my journey here. And he says, I'm proud to leave behind a tangible achievement in our operations, having successfully reduced system losses from 30 to 26%. This progress reflects the hard work and dedication of our entire team, and I'm confident that they will continue to strive for excellence in the years to come. He concludes by saying that to my colleagues and staff, I urge you to keep pushing forward. Your commitment and passion for this country have been inspiring, and I have no doubt that you will provide steadfast support whoever assumes my role. Your resilience and hard work are vital to the future success of the Electricity Company of Ghana. As I embark on this new chapter in my life, I carry with me cherished memories, invaluable lessons learned from each of you. Thank you once again for the opportunity to be part of this incredible organization. I look forward to continued growth and success of ECG. And this is signed by Samuel Dubik Mahama, the address to the board chair of the ECG, effective today.
And I've been on the phone to him trying to get an understanding of what really prompted this. He insists, as you see in that particular letter, that he resigned for personal reasons. The president will have a say in this particular matter. We don't know yet if this resignation has been accepted or not, but it's something that he definitely believes is the right call to make at this time. And this is coming within the context of what we've been reporting, Elting, over the last few days. Yourself on the Midday News have reported quite extensively about the running battles the ECG has had with the regulator, the PRLC, which has played out in the public domain. We actually, at one point, last few months, did a Joy News national dialogue on this, and it played out again. We saw the entrenched positions that were taken both by the PRLC and the ECG for the very first time in a long time, indeed. I don't remember the last time this happened, where a regulator was publicly fighting an institution it regulates. And it all revolves around the alleged mismanagement of the cash waterfall mechanism. And Elton, you will remember that it got so bad that the PRLC at some point actually threatened to jail the heads, the board of directors, including the MD, but they were also slapped with huge fines for them to pay. The ECG then got their lawyers to write back. It took the presidency to try and intervene to try and resolve this particular matter. You cannot ignore that background. Now hearing and confirming that the MD of ECG has resigned.
Of course, everyone, you can never discount the tension that existed between the PRC and, of course, the MD of ECG. I can make reference to the last letter the ECG MD wrote to the finance minister, giving an indication of the state of ECG at the time. And these letters are dated 28 August 2024, and then actually one titled request for capital expenditure for replacement of prepaid meters. The other one, the same day, also requested for assistance in exporting power to mitigate foreign exchange losses. And the last letter they wrote to the PURC, and this is dated September 11th, request for buffer period for cash buildup. And these letters make reference to the fact that the state of ECG requires some kind of capital infusion. Otherwise, the possibility of the company going bankruptcy could not be ruled out. And that is the same response the PURC provided when it sought to clarify the reason behind the bankruptcy wording that was introduced in the conversation, and made reference to the fact that, in fact, it was actually introduced in the conversation by ECG, the conclusion of PURC. So clearly, there had been back and forth tension between the two bodies, and I'm absolutely certain that, I mean, it got to a point that Dobrik Mahama had to virtually write this letter today and then gives indication of stepping down as MD 2 weeks time.
And if you're just joining us, and some major developing story as far as the power sector is concerned, the managing director of ECG has resigned. We just read out that statement to you. It's a letter that he's writing to the board of the ECG. Waning right now is Nana Mwesi, executive director of the Institute for Energy Security. They've been watching the space very closely. We spoke to him earlier this year when the feud between the PRC and the ECG played out in the public domain. Nana Mwesi is surprised by the outcome.
Good evening to you, Kajao, and to your listeners. From the IESX, we aren't surprised at the resignation of the boss of ECG. It's been something that we've been waiting for a long time. We get an indication that for personal reason that he's resigning. Yes, probably for non-performance, as he takes it. That's why he may resign. But I think that it's a good, move is done. Just that we count it as meaningless unless it's linked with the resignation of the board as well.
You want the board to also resign?
Definitely. The board cannot be, when we are talking about the performance of ECG, the poor performance, we cannot discount the role of the board. Strategic, direction they give. They give approval to major undertakings of the ECG. If the ECG performed well, I'm sure they would have taken some credit. But for non-performance, they should equally take the blame as well.
You know, just recently that the board chair of ECG himself was rumored to have stepped down and a replacement was found. I mean, the ECG has gone through a very turbulent period. I mean, to lose the MD, and now to suggest that entire board should go at this time, critical time indeed, with just a few weeks, actually days now, just over 70 days for an election. Is it the right thing to do?
Well, I want us to delink it from the election. And we are waiting to do the right thing until we have a new government. Then, of course, we are starting to we are accepting underperformance. We are trying to approve of non-performance and put the danger of the entire power, put the entire power sector in danger. I'm sure that if we want to do any correction, it must start from today. We don't have tomorrow. It's been consistently for 1 year that we've seen that ECG has not been able to collect even more than 60% of the revenue that it is mandated to collect. Would we want to wait for another 2 months? Every month, we lose over 50% of the revenue that we need to have as a country, and also to put the cash waterfall mechanism in good shape. We're waiting for another 2-3 months for a new government reform to do these corrections? No. The earlier we take the step, the better. So let's separate the decision that we need to make today from the election.
And you've made the point about the board resigning, but remember that this well, the context, Dubik Mahama, as we know, has said in the letter to the board that he is resigning for personal reasons. But we've seen this very public fight between himself, the ECG, and the PULC. Is this an opportunity to restructure that whole institution, ECG, at a time when you've seen that even Asante Kinney weighed in recently about privatizing that institution? I mean, considering what has happened, is an opportunity to take a pause and look at this more broadly, more comprehensively?
A huge opportunity presented to us today that we need to correct all the wrongs that we've seen under the ECG. Never have I heard that a whole PRC, a regulator, will be stopped from undertaking its regulatory, steps. Seeing clearly that a player within the same sector fighting a regulator, this is the first time I've seen this. A simple timetable. We got indication that even a whole minister will back the ECG not to produce one. That open fight we saw between these two key players was uncalled for and so bad. In fact, except even an investment in the sector. We saw the same when it came to Greco and PRC. We think that we have a good moment to do the right thing this time around. And so the board must still go. Let's have some fresh limbs. Let's get new people in the boardroom, fresh ideas to correct the non-performance we have today.
And then I thank you very much. Then I'm Wisi, there's Executive Director of the Institute for Energy Security, joining us on the back of that developing story we're learning about in the last few minutes. The Managing Director of the Electricity Company of Ghana, Samuel Dubik Mahama, has resigned. And that comes in the context of a long-standing feud with the PRC that has been playing out in the public domain for quite a while. And I've interviewed Samuel Dubik Mahama many times in the last few months on this particular subject. And it all started, if you recall, with this regulatory order that was issued by PULC. And this was in March, on the 18th of March. And if you recall, at the time, the country was experiencing a period of erratic power supply, call it Dumso. And ECG had come out to say that the reason for that was some malfunctioning transformers across the country, some 630 overloaded transformers. And the PRC then wrote to the ECG, asking the ECG to provide evidence of that. And we did the Dumso Diaries on the back of that. That didn't stop that back and forth from continuing. As we've heard tonight, the CG boss is gone. We're hearing from the minority today on the power sector.
Yeah.
They are actually alleging that we have a significant shortfall in generation that may be plunging many of us in darkness.
Yes, they allege about 500 megawatts of power shortfall. Now, they're making this allegation on the back of concerns because they say between Tuesday and Wednesday, the ECG put out several notices of outages in parts of the country, but attributed the power cuts to routine maintenance. But the minority spokesperson on energy, Evans Johnjanapo, says the power cuts is due to load shedding, attributing the situation to poor management of the power sector.
As we speak today, there is load shedding ongoing. Gridco has been cautioned not to inform customers. Yesterday, there was a deficit of more than 500 megawatts. Today, they are going to shed load, and customers in Ghana will be affected. Talo Ghana has not been paid even $1 for the past 9 months for gas supply to Ghana Gas. And Talo is threatening to curtail supply of gas. The IPPs have just dispatched a letter to the Minister of Finance intending to halt supply of power for debt and liabilities hovering around $1.2 billion. It is sad that the energy sector is collapsing. The PURC recently confirmed that ECG is on the verge of bankruptcy. ECG alone incurred a debt of 10 billion cedis in their latest financial statement. All is not well with the energy sector. It is obvious from what is happening that the Akufo-Addo Bawumia government is just giving palliative care to the energy sector, intending to hand over a broken dilapidated, aging energy sector to the Mahama administration. We are well aware that it will take a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of commitment to restore the energy sector back on the path of positive trajectory. But what we would not tolerate is for this government, which is on the verge of losing the elections, to rush into signing contracts through Ghana Gas. A similar one is being done at Tema Oil Refinery. And let me also caution Tema Oil Refinery and their staff, especially the senior management, that the opacity that is characterizing the award or sale of the Tema Oil Refinery will also not be countenance.
Well, it's time now for business, and George Weafi joins me in the studio. George, what should we expect?
Well, we'll be expecting to be getting you more details about some shortage of LPG that has hit the market, and we'll be getting you more details on that one as well. And all regional airlines operating out of Kotoko International Airport to be moved to Terminal 2. I'll be getting you more details on that one. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books and Stationery Synthesis Tanks.
You see them every day in our communities, doing what they do best to make a difference in the lives of people. You see them. You see them bring positive transformation to the lives of people in the areas of education, health, and economic empowerment. While many will see them and turn their faces away, you see them. You see their efforts, and you know they're heroes who deserve to be celebrated. MTN Heroes of Change is setting out to unearth and to celebrate a new set of heroes. You can throw the light on the heroes you see in your community by nominating them to win 100,000 Ghana cedis and other prizes to help them expand their work. Just fill an online nomination form at mtn.com.gh or send a WhatsApp with a 1-minute video of your nominee's project on 055-141-1122. Deadline for nominations is 18th October 2024. So don't waste time. Nominate your hero now. MTN Heroes of Change. Be the change you wish to see.
Hooray! Kingdom Books and Stationery Limited's back to school promotion is here with us once again. From August to September this year, Kingdom Books and Stationery Limited is giving a generous 10 to 20% discount on all school items like textbooks, pens, pencils, erasers, exercise books, and much more across all our branches in Accra, Tema, Kumasi, Takrade, Winneba, and Cape Coast. Parents, teachers, and students, please hurry while stocks last. For more information, call us on 0506-487-557 or 0302-764-209 or via email at info@kingdomgh.com. You can also visit our website www.kingdomstoreonline.com. Kingdom Books, where quality and affordability are both assured. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah. We have a new leader in town, OBRNT. I'm on for me. Don't want to see the brain. When you say my baby, maybe mom more charcoal for whiter teeth. More charcoal. Not only that, maybe mom lemon. More lemon. Zinc for fresher breath. More zinc. And fluoride for stronger teeth.
Hey. Introducing the new President Charcoal packed with more power with a combination of charcoal and lemon for naturally whiter teeth. Grab yours now. This advert is FDA approved.
This October, come and encounter Jesus in a way you've never experienced before. The Maker's House Chapel International presents Experience Conference 2024 under the theme Jesus. From 6th to 13th October, join us for a week of divine connection and spiritual renewal. Be transformed by powerful ministrations from anointed men of God, Pastor Jonathan Miller, Reverend Eastwood Anoba, Dr. Diony Bias, and your host, Dr. Michael Brady Nyamiche. The venue is the Destiny Arena of the Maker's House Chapel International, Hunter Atomic, Atchison School of Nuclear and Allied Sciences. Weekday services start 6:30 p.m. and weekends 8 a.m. Experience Conference 2024. Don't just hear about it, be a part of it. Experience Jesus.
They're luckiest.
Star 712 Lush.
Luck is everywhere for everyone, yeah.
the luckiest.
Stars, everyone to hush.
Luck is everywhere for everyone. Yeah.
Doctors,
nurses,
barbers,
drivers,
bouncers,
friends,
teachers,
bankers.
You could be the luckiest. You could be the luckiest.
Go.
The luckiest.
Star 712H.
Luck is everywhere for everyone. Yeah. The luckiest.
Star 712H.
Luck is everywhere for everyone. Yeah.
Doctors,
nurses,
barbers,
drivers,
bouncers,
friends,
teachers,
bankers.
Star 712H.
You could be the luckiest.
You're welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, parts of Accra and Tema have been hit by shortage of liquefied petroleum gas. Now, this is due to what industry players describe as some supply challenges with Tema Oil Refinery. Vice President of the LPG Market Association, Gabriel Kumi, tells Joy Business the Tema Oil Refinery must move to deal with the situation now.
If the supply situation does not improve by tomorrow, we're likely to have a very serious situation on hand. We have tried to find out what is really happening. And now our understanding is that the company that brought in the ship last week and distributed to all the depots in Tema is not able to reconcile its figures with Tema Oil Refinery. And that is what is holding up everybody. So at this juncture, we will call on Tema Oil Refinery to ensure that whatever reconciliation that it has to do, it does it as immediately as possible so that the rest of the BDCs, the rest of the depots that are holding the product can begin releasing this product onto the market through the LPG marketing companies. We don't know why only TOR is having issue with reconciliation.
Gabriel Kumi is the vice president of the LPG Marketers Association of Ghana. But some checks with officials of Tema Oil Refinery just some few minutes ago say the issue has been resolved. Now I'll be getting you more developments on the issue as the time goes on. Two other stories then. Almost all regional airlines operating out of Kutukan International Airport will soon be moved from Terminal 3 to Terminal 2. The Ghana Airport Company is proposing December 1, 2024 as the expected date for these airlines to be relocated. There is more in this report.
The move is part of efforts by the Ghana Airport Company Limited to decongest Terminal 3 at the Kutuka International Airport, which currently serves as the operating hub for both the regional and international airlines. However, Joy Business is learning that the move will hit regional airlines like Sky, Ibom Air, Airpeace, and Africa World Airlines. Sources say the directive will also affect other carriers like Egypt Air, Kenya Airways, Ethiopian Airlines, Rwanda Air, and South Africa Airlines. The proposals have not gone down well with some of the airlines who are first worried about the short notice and the fact that some of these international airlines are also doing regional operations as the fear of losing passengers to them. There are also concerns that a passenger traveling on a regional airline is paying the same tax as someone flying to London. Some of the airlines operating on the West African region are also worried about the current state of Terminal 2 at the Kutuka International Airport. Some have described the move by the Ghana Airport Company Limited as a cost-saving venture and make use of the Terminal 2, which is said to be underutilized. The Ghana Airport Company, in a statement released earlier this year, revealed that they are working to move some airlines to Terminal 2 as part of some restructuring exercise.
And that is a Business Dex report. Now, businesses are optimistic that Ghana will pass the third review of the IMF program, which will go a long way to impact positively on the environment. They also believe that this will go a long way to aid in the recovery of the economy. President of the Ghana National Chamber of Commerce and Industry, Dr. Clement Osiamako, tells Joy Business they're looking to the news also impacting on their operations going forward.
And we have seen growth rates moving up to 4.7. We are also very optimistic that currently the exchange rate forex has been quite stable, though we were not able to handle it at the beginning of the year. Inflation has moved away from 53 point something to 20.4, showing significantly that the bailout has been very supportive. Besides, the recent etc. that we did with our creditors has also been very fruitful. I believe that if we continue like that, the economy will come back to where it used to be. I believe that it will boost the economy, it will bring confidence back, and then the exchange rate will be stable. So we are very optimistic that the bailout, I think that at the moment we are left with about 1.4, 1.7 at the best, and that has been very good. Whatever comes to us as a result of the bailout, in addition to the, if we are getting the entire last tranche, then that will be so much good for the economy.
Dr. Clement Osei-Amoako is the president of the Ghana National Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Now, mining firms are raising issues about government tax policy measures towards the sector. The firms are especially worried about the upfront payment of taxes on the yet-to-be-commenced production on their concessions. Suleiman Kone is chief executive of the Ghana Chamber of Mines.
But I don't like talking about the fiscal regime too much, because I'm not so the school of thought which says that once you come into a country, you have an agreement, you know what the fiscal regime is, you decide to do business here, you complain. No, I've never believed in that. You know what it is, you decided to actually opt for it. You have to play by the rules. Mm. However, when in the middle of production and the company has made all these investments and then you start tweaking the fiscal regime, that is where the issue is. And that's why you have some of the companies who are saying that, look, I need to have a stability agreement or a project development agreement, because then it freezes the fiscal terms. Mm. Don't forget that we are talking about an industry whose price is not determined by the companies. Mm. They are effectively a price taker. Mm. We are not like an FMCG. You decide to brand, you have differentiation in terms of the premium quality of the product, and therefore you can charge a premium and all of that. Ours is not like that. Ours is a commodity. So you have an area which you need to manage to be viable, and that is your cost. Mm. So if you have a situation where governments upfront decide that, look, I'm going to take so much. Mm.
Suleiman Kone is the chief executive of the Ghana Chamber of Mines. To some market news, a Cultural Development Bank is said to have raised about 1.5 billion Ghana cedis through rights issue. Not this was contained in a circular to investors on the Ghana Stock Exchange. This has resulted in some 1.3 billion shares listed on the Ghana Stock Exchange. If you have invested on the market from January to now, you've gotten more than 40% return on the market, which is better than other investment instruments on the market as we speak right now. And that's all for Business on Newsnight. Back to you, Fosti or Faustina?
Thank you, George. It's Faustina. Now it's time for sports. What's happening?
Well, the Black Stars of Ghana and their former captain, Stephen Appiah, wants more local players to be included in the senior national team in subsequent collapse. Appiah was speaking before Parliament's Select Committee on Sports as it continued its deliberations on the petition submitted before it by the Save Ghana Football Forum.
Yes, I think we have to give the local players, we have to give them the chance, the confidence to play for the national team. So in our time, even there are certain players that looks as if they are key players in the team. We were not key players. We have players like William Thero and the rest who were pushing us. So we have to make sure that we are not going to allow them to take our positions. When we played against Niger, the number 7, who was the best player on the pitch, who played for Niger, is a Ghanaian. We have a striker who won the Goal King in Ghana Premier League because he didn't get a chance. Now he's playing for Togo. So we have to give our boys, we have to give them the chance.
Thank you, Achiu Tamako, for bringing out sports. Now let's do some other stories. A man in Dambai has founded Dream Village, a sustainable farming and training center to nurture the next generation of climate activists. Located near the Oti River, it uses eco-friendly housing, solar power, and rainwater harvesting. Over 2 years, the village will train local farmers and environmentalists in regenerative agriculture, promoting safe food production and environmental stewardship. On our climate focus series today, Mahmoud Mohammed Nuruddin examines how these initiatives support climate change mitigation.
My name is Clement Matomas, and I'm the founder of Dream Village Ghana. Our main objective is to provide a space where people can come and dream. Farmers can come and learn about regenerative agriculture. And
Clement Matomasin is overseeing the village garden while other workers engage in various tasks to maintain productivity. Structures at the village are from mud-based construction materials such as earth and thatch, which are cost-effective and can sequester carbon dioxide.
The round huts help harness energy within the housing system so that at least energy, positive energy, will keep staying within the housing. It helps to sustain it. Instead of burning the bushes, we have the thatch that is being harvested to roof the houses.
According to Clement, the Dream Village family believes in the transformative potential of regenerative agriculture to empower the upcoming generation of farmers.
When we go into a community, as part of what we do is providing training, we notice that more and more young people are drifting away from farming because right from young age we are made to believe that farming is hard labor, farming is for the poor.
Experts warn that rising temperatures and the effect of climate change are disproportionately affecting vulnerable populations worldwide, including those in Ghana.
Climate Focus is brought to you by Joy News in partnership with Youth Bridge Foundation, bridging gaps for positive youth development, and the Climate Development Knowledge Network.
Time now for fact checking. Today we're focusing on some recent claims made by the Majority Leader and Member of Parliament for Efutu, Alexander Fayomarkin, on the selection of Dr. Balmia as a flag bearer of the governing New Patriotic Party. Here's head of our research, Dex Raymond Akwa, with more.
Alexander Kwame Fayomarkin said NPP is the first party ever since independence to give a Muslim the opportunity to be a flag bearer.
For the first time since 1957, when this country attained independence, it has taken the MPP as the first party ever to give a Muslim an opportunity to be a flag bearer in the politics of the country.
Now, the claim that the governing party is the first party since independence to give a Muslim the opportunity to be a flag bearer in the politics of this country is completely false. Ahead of the 1979 general elections, the political party called Social Democratic Front, SDF, made a Muslim, Ibrahim Mahama, its presidential candidate, with Mao Sidake as his running mate. Now, the SDF actually won three constituencies in northern region. Again, we all know that Hassan Yariga, a Muslim, was elected flag bearer in 2011 by the PNC to contest the presidential election in 2012. Of course, he received 0.22% in the vote in that year.
Well, that's it for News 9. For more news, please log on.